Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer and The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Pushkin. Tanya Tucker was only 14 in the spring of 1972 when she released Delta Dawn. It was her first crack at recording a single, and while she was still in school, the song became a country radio hit, her first of dozens over the years. Even at that young age, and despite being a woman, she was lumped in with a crop of country singers known affectionately as outlaws. Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, Waylon Jennings. She took a little break from the music business in the early 80s, and then came roaring back in the 90s during another classic period of country music. By her own admission, she was just unmotivated to record music over the last couple of decades and just sort of fell off. But that all changed when she met Brandi Carlile. Brandi, a singer-songwriter from outside Seattle with a country flair, has been killing it since 2018 when her breakout album, By the Way I Forgive You, was released. She wrote The Wheels of Laredo and several others on Tanya's album, While I'm Living, and co-produced the record with Waylon's son, Shooter Jennings. It's Tanya's first album of new material in 16 years, and she almost didn't make it, after bailing a few times on the recording sessions, thinking the songs just weren't good enough. Though eventually she released and made what others and her now consider to be her comeback record. And as you'll hear, our own Rick Rubin had something to do with it. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Just a quick note here. You can listen to all of the music mentioned in this episode on our playlist, which you can find a link to in the show notes. For licensing reasons, each time a song is referenced in this episode, you'll hear this sound effect. All right, enjoy the episode. Rick sat with Brandi and Tanya at Shangri-La in Malibu to talk about the album and what it means after so much time away to make vibrant music again at 60.
Hello, Mr. Rubin. How are you?
A pleasure meeting you.
Nice to see you.
I'm going to try to get up.
No, keep your seat.
Have you ever
Rubin yet? I never have. No. I sent my nephew out in the parking lot to give him my message.
I remember. Outside of
I'm too scared to go talk to him. You go talk to him.
Colony. I didn't know you were there.
Yeah.
He didn't say you were there.
Well, I lived up on Matador for a while.
But he didn't say that you were there.
Oh, he didn't?
No.
She loves you.
Yeah, I said, go out there. That's Rick Rubin. Go give him my phone number.
I like your makeup today.
My makeup? I hardly have any on, girl.
Maybe that's why I like it.
Did my Brandi look today.
I like it.
I was busting ass trying to get here. It was a great day, though. A beautiful day for a convertible.
You had top down today?
Yeah.
Nice. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, boy. It really is. A lot of traffic, though.
Where you come from?
We came from Oklahoma City. We did a show there on the 13th. And then headed pointed the bus this way. So here we
are. Are you on tour most of the time?
Yeah. Lifetime.
Beautiful.
Lifetime.
Her and her dogs.
It don't stop. And they're both on their cycle.
Oh, Lord. So the Quaid, dogs
Dennis
running around
Quaid
in diapers.
Gave me some bulldogs. And I just talked to him, by the way. And he wants me to mention to you, so I can have this done, that Felice, did I mention to you about Felicia and Boudlow Bryant?
No.
About they wrote 5,000 songs, but only 1,600 have been cut. Like,
oh, yeah.
Rocky Top, You'll Always. Very famous duo and writing. And he is getting all the, I guess he's doing the same thing like with Cowboy Jack, getting all the catalog. And they really, his family, their family wants Mew, of course. I said, people, everyone wants that. You just cut one of their songs. And I said, well, I'll tell her. And they want me to cut one of their songs and pick one that maybe hadn't been recorded yet. So I said, well, I'll tell her, and then I can give her the details later.
Well, you know by now. There's
make
no,
sure you tell Brandy that.
There's no road I won't follow you down.
Oh,
so.
I said, I swear. I'm sure they got some great songs. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if I can wear that or not. I'm hot.
I love you so,
so
much.
So damn hot. It's tripping it off. Yeah, it was so cool, Rick, when we came in here. I'd never been here before.
Yeah.
And we recorded Christofferson in here.
Oh,
on
beautiful.
Song of Dennis's. He's a great writer. And a song called On My Way to Heaven. And so we recorded it here.
Beautiful.
And everybody here was so great.
Nice.
Really, really.
It's a good crew. It's a nice place to come.
Really, really. Got, they were so sweet. And, you know, it was just really, really monumental for me to have Chris come in. And he did such a good job. I'm so proud of it.
He's one of the real great writers. Like,
yeah. Well, yeah.
As good as it gets.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and then Billy Joe Shaver called me on the way over here.
Mm.
And I guess Dennis is trying to help him get his catalog and all that together. It's all over the place. And he's had some health trouble. So, you know, he's always there, Quaid. He's always right there. And now he's putting all my stuff together. You know, old videos and things. That home movies and things that just are just really precious to me. But couldn't get anybody to, when you start looking for stuff like that, yeah, where is it? You know, is it my warehouse? Is it, who's got it?
What was your first experience of going on the road?
My first experience of going on the road, I guess probably that would have to be, I was still going to school. I had like 3 number one records out, still going to school, trying to stay in school. And
how old were you at the time?
I was 15.
Okay.
Just turning 15. Didn't have my own band yet. And I had Delta Dawn, Jamestown, Blood Red. And I think might have been Would You Lay With Me in a Field of Stone, but David Allen Coe song.
Yeah, great song.
It went number one, you know.
Great song.
So we were living in right outside of Las Vegas. And we got a Texas tour with Johnny Rodriguez. Johnny Rodriguez had out passing by, and of course, like Delta Dawn. So he's like 20, and I was 14. And we had 2 brown Lincoln Continentals, and he had one, and I had the other. And I think we probably played every juice joint in Texas,
wow.
You know, with the chicken wire and
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, he was at that time. He was like Elvis. I mean, the girls would just go crazy over him. And then I'd get up there, and the guys are afraid to, you know, holler for me. And the girlfriends get mad, you know. I always used to be so mad about that. God dang it, why don't they do me like that, you know? You know? And I get up there, and they'd like, you know, it's quiet. And we had this band called the Cowtowners working for both of us who, you know, was not what I would think the greatest band in the world. But we did it. We did, I bet, 3 months, 3 or 4 months. And then last show was in Lubbock, Texas. And we had to go back to San Antonio, which is where our hub was. And my mother, my dad, me, and this little kid my dad was managing decided instead of flying back, my dad thought we'd save some money. and drive back to San Antonio, 160 miles, with this fan that followed me everywhere. He had a Ford LTD. And here we go. And in Brady, Texas, we had a head-on collision. And, you know, little bitty small hospital. 7 minutes after we had the head-on collision, a bunch of young cowboys, like 17, 18, about seven of them got in a wreck. So that hospital was one little doctor there. And my mother was the worst. She really got the brunt of all of it and broke both of my dad's arms. I had a concussion. And they kept my mother for about 3 months in the hospital, and they would just turn her, you know. She was in a contraption where, what was so wild about it, though, is they did x-rays. Mm. And they did x-rays on my mother, on her neck and her back, was both broken. Mm-hmm. And then we get to San Antonio, and they rushed us in, and they did the, of course, all the way there, Jeff Allen, the little kid that my dad was managing, he prayed all the way. I've never heard anybody pray like that in my life, and fast. Oh, Heavenly Father, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I was like, Jeff, be quiet, you know. And he prayed all the way to San Antonio for my mother, and they took x-rays of her, and the doctor came out and told my dad, her neck's not broken. And he goes, the hell it ain't. And he gave him the other x-rays, yeah. Put them side by side.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't know what to say. He said, it's just a miracle. So yeah. I always,
you that's know, your memory. Felt, that's your felt, first memory of being
I
on
felt
the road.
Very, very connected to Jeff after that. Yeah. So, you know, I felt like it was him. He was the reason.
Beautiful.
But that was it was just a really hard time, you know, that first tour.
What was it like being in school with other kids and you have hit records on the radio?
Well, I had a lot of problems. I mean, I had just moved to, my dad pulled up at a trailer. It's called Trailer Estates.
Estates.
Had a for sale sign out in front of it. And my dad says, I'll be right back. He's like, you and mother wait in the car. So about 10 minutes later, he waved us in. We walked in and that there was a lady in there that owned the trailer. He said, sing this lady a song. And I just reared back and did, you're cheating heart, you know. And but when I got done singing, that's why I like crazy people. she said, I'm going to Missouri. I'll see y'all later. And she left. So we moved in to this trailer.
Amazing.
And I don't know what my dad said to her, but I guess she put two and four together and looked pretty good. And so we lived there, and I was going to school, and my dad was working, my mother was working at Safeway, and I was looking for change in the sofa every morning. I don't remember it being hard for me, but it was.
When you went to school?
Oh, yeah. Finally, my dad started letting me drive the car, and I'd drive my car I was in high school. I was first year of high school, my freshman year. When I was riding the bus, I'd get off the bus and there'd be girls, you know, Delta Sue, what's that poo I smell on you? Could it be you need a bath and shower too?
Oh,
you know,
no,
and they were
really?
They'd make fun of me. So my dad he started teaching me how to fight, how to box, you know.
Oh, no.
He said, them girls, he said, they can't take it on the nose. He said, you get it one time on the nose, they're out. You know, them boys, he said, can take it. But the girls, one time, boom, gone. And he said, just give him one of them, you know, bring one from the floor. So I would be getting boxing lessons
Mr.
from my dad
Tucker.
At night. And then there was one time when I looked and I looked and I found those yellow boxes, you know. He didn't want me to see that those yellow boxes, I guess, or food stamps or whatever.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I found them and my mother says, don't you tell your dad you found those. Because he was a very, you know, proud man. And you know, when we went out on the road, it was, we learned together, you know.
Were you not getting paid for the music? Like, you had songs on the radio.
Well, we
but you were on food stamps?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. We didn't really know what the next move was. My dad was shooting from the hip, you know, he didn't know. And, but everything we did do was because of him. And, kind of learn together. And I remember one time we had that old station wagon. It was going somewhere. He's trying to get me to meet with somebody. You know, this was before I got started, or before I had the record, first record. And he pulled into a gas station, said, listen, son, he said, I got a brand new Jack in the back of my car. He said, if you'll fill my tank full of gas, you can have that Jack. And that guy just went, yeah, hell, sure. Because he was trying to get me somewhere, you know, that would hopefully somebody would do something for me. And the guy, of course, it was a bum deal, but at least he tried. And then that's the way my dad was. But he finally got my second manager was John Kelly, and in Las Vegas, and he ended up having to buy him out because he knew he couldn't take me where I needed to go. And I toured with his wife for a while, Judy Lynn, and I was playing the lounges, you know, three shows a night, the Flamingo Hotel at 14, you know. Jeez. So it's pretty wild. I don't really think about it much till I start talking about it, you know.
Yeah. Will you tell Rick about how your dad used to sleep?
Yeah, well, me and my dad would tour a lot. Just me and him, we had a house band. So he'd be driving, trying to get to the next gig, and I'd just slide over.
He'd be like, baby, I need a nap.
Yeah, he'd go, I gotta sleep. And he'd slide over, and I would drive for a lot. And he'd wake up a couple hours later and go, oh, my God, you know.
And I was, how old were you?
I was 14. And it was one time I was sitting on the back of the toilet in the girls' locker room, and we was playing somewhere up north in Wisconsin. The place was packed, a little high school gym. And I'm sitting on the back of the toilet with my feet on the toilet seat in the girls' locker room, and in a stall. So my dad would, you know, just kind of, he's pacing. I'm going, I can't talk. I can't even sing. I can't talk. What are you going to do now? I had laryngitis so bad. And I watched him come in, and I'd see him go by pacing. And he finally stopped and said, I got it. He said, I got it. He goes, that contract said 1 hour show. Didn't say a damn thing about singing. He said, you just get up there. And he said, you tell them people that you can't sing tonight, but your band's going to play all your songs, which wasn't my band. And you're going to sign autographs and shake everybody's hands. And let's get our money going down the road. And I think it was like $600. And nobody left. He said, they didn't come to hear you. They can hear you on the radio. They can hear you at home on a record player. He said, they come to see you. And if you look at them once, he said, and he also said something about, remember, pick out the ugliest boy on the front row. He said, because them boys don't get no attention. He said, and they'll buy records till the day you die. But them pretty boys, they get all the attention all the time. And so I learned a lot from him. I showed up one time.
I could listen to you talk about him all day long.
We showed up one time, and the outside bleachers were full. And in those days, country promoters were just the worst. They were really the worst.
In those days.
Oh, yeah. Well, not much has changed. But I got there, and the promoter didn't have any speakers. No speakers. So I said to my dad, okay, now what are we going to do? You know, Mr. Brilliant, you know. He said, hey, just sing real loud. And that's what I did. I did the whole show with no speakers. And I was so hoarse for...
How many people were there? How many?
Oh, I'd say probably 1,500.
Wow.
It was a big... Wow. It was on one of them racetracks, you know?
Yes.
Jeez. Oh, my gosh.
Outdoors.
Yeah. Outdoors. Yeah, my dad was a warrior. I've never met anybody like him.
Yeah.
You know, everybody always talks about their mom and dad, and oh, I've got the best. And, you know, I had the best parents for me.
Yeah.
In the whole world. And I'm so glad that I was blessed with both of them.
Beautiful.
You know.
Beautiful.
And they were married, 67 years when my dad passed in 06. On Thanksgiving morning, he got his wings. And so that was it was a real tough time for me after that. I was living out here, actually, in Malibu.
Yeah.
And kind of lost my mojo after that. And then my mother passed in 2012, and that was like, what am I doing this for? You know, I lost the people that really, I just felt like there was less love in the future than there had been in the past.
Yes.
And I didn't want to accept that. But then I thought, well, I got my kids, and Yeah, that's a future that's going to be there, that they're always going to love me. But I felt like I'd lost the ones that were going to love me the most. And that was in the past, and the future wasn't bright enough. And then here comes Brandy.
Well, I love you.
I know you do.
I love you with all my damn heart.
And that's the great thing about it is I know she's telling me the truth. Yeah.
How did you guys meet?
We met on FaceTime.
I met Tanya before she met me because I started singing Tanya's music as an eight-year-old on stage at the Northwest Grand Ole Opry outside of Seattle, where I'm from. Northerners feel, I think, more passionate about country music than Southerners do sometimes because we don't have proximity on our side. So we defensively say, you know, country isn't Southern, it's country and Western.
Yeah, country and Western.
Yeah, and so I loved country music, but I had this sense of gender dysphoria, and I didn't understand what my place was as a singer because I wanted to sound tough. And I heard Delta Dawn, and I was like, that woman sounds tough. And they're like, well, that's not a woman, that's a little girl. And she's 13, you know, and I was 8. And I was like, well, hell, like, this is me. This is what I want to do. I want to sound just like that, like that girl. And then I started doing San Antonio Stroll and What's Your Mama's Name, and right up through Trouble, and right up through Strong Enough to Bend, mm-hmm. and all the way to Two Sparrows and a Hurricane. I became such a Tanya Tucker fanatic as a child. So I've been in love with Tanya's music and didn't see any difference between Tanya and Cash, or Tanya and Dolly, or Tanya and Loretta, because she's such a part of that landscape. Even though she was so much younger than all of them, she was right there alongside him at the Opry. And so it just passed, you know, as I kind of dove into Britpop and started to kind of have these crushes on flamboyant gay British men. But it all came back to me when I kind of found my roots again, and I wondered, like, where the hell is Tanya Tucker? You know? And I was on stage.
She's playing Tucson.
Yeah, where the hell is Tanya Tucker? And Shooter Jennings says to me when we were making the album, he goes, I think I just heard some Tanya Tucker in your voice. And I was like, oh, yeah, you did. You really did. And I was like, God, why isn't Tanya Tucker making any music anymore? Is she not well? Like, what's going on? He's like, actually, she's really well, and she can sing her ass off. And I'm going to make a record with her. You want to write some songs? And I was like, please, please introduce me to Tanya Tucker. And he did. He introduced me to Tanya. He got me involved in the album. And now Tanya's become one of my best friends, and she's my hero. Amazing. And mentor.
Oh, it's totally. It's
meant
like
to be.
Almost like a, yeah, it's almost like it was written.
Yeah.
Already written, like, and we're just living it out. But I was playing Vegas, actually, when the Grammys nominations came out. And of course, Randy was up for 6. And I was so sick in Vegas, and I didn't think I thought this is really where I'm going to die. The Golden Nugget in Las Vegas.
You were so sick.
Oh, I just knew there was going to be a death of me.
You work hard, T.
And they finally got me in the hotel room, and I was having an IV, trying to, you know, vitamin IV and get better. And the FaceTime call came in, and it was Brandy. So I'm laying there like, and just letting her talk. And that's kind of how we first met. But, I mean, as far as, you know, looking at each other. But the real first time I met her was the day we walked into the studio, the first day we worked. And I had never really heard of her. I was out of the loop. My kids did. My kids, Mom, you know, Brandy Carlile, oh, my God. Like Elle King, you know, she wanted to do something with me, and I didn't know. I wasn't aware. And my kids were like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. You know, so they really informed me a lot, actually, about what's going on. And they were very aware of Brandy. But I had never really heard her sing any of her songs, or The Joke. And what was the other one you did? Did you do The Joke on the Grammys?
Yeah.
And the story, it was those two. But I saw her on the Grammys. And that's after we.
That's the first time you heard me sing, even though we had made the record.
We'd been in the studio for 3 weeks, and I happened to watch the Grammys, and I saw her, and I thought, wow, this girl's blowing me away. And then the other day, we were in New York City. She was playing Philly, and Lucas was playing, or no, you were in New Jersey, something like that. Lucas was close by.
Lucas Nelson.
Yeah. And, of course, we just played Farm Aid, getting ready to play Farm Aid.
Yeah.
And so I took the train to Philly from New York.
Surprised me.
Yeah. And
got on stage and we did,
because I'd never seen her perform.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was Lucas. Then Lucas came over and joined us. And but I, you know, she said something. Of course, I went to Lucas's bus. And after that, I was going like, I'm, and they said, Randy's going to want you to sing. And I went, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. How long does this last, Lucas? How long is this going to last? He's like, well, it'll last a pretty long time. But I,
oh, why? You guys smoked some weed?
Yeah. And I'm like,
that's what happened.
I'm going, I can't talk. I don't know how these guys sing when they do that stuff. So we went over, and I get this bright idea, you know, to come from the audience when she introduced me.
Yeah, so
but
I'm
I forgot to tell her. And I forgot to tell anybody because it was she was already on when I thought of it.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be so cool to come from the audience when she. So I'm watching kind of in the back, and because I don't like to be in the audience, I never have liked it. So I see Ike coming on stage and whispering something into Brandy's ear.
Ike's my tour manager.
Like, we can't find her. We can't find her anywhere.
And I wasn't surprised. I was not surprised. I was like, well, if she's meant to be up here, she's going to get up here.
Yeah. And so
sure
I said, okay.
Shit, here comes Sandy Tucker walking down the middle of the aisle.
I saw the problem. And I went, oh, shit. So I hustled down to the front row. And I looked. And there was one seat in the very middle.
Yeah.
And so I went, and I sat down. Of course, it kind of backfired. Because all her fans on the front row recognized me.
Yes.
And then they didn't, you know, the twins and her are singing this song, and I was really wanting to get into it, and they were, oh, I got to tell you the story. I want to watch, you know, just give me a little time. And they were taking pictures and shit. And I went, oh, I'm sorry, Brandy. I just kind of backfired on me. But then she introduced me, and I crawled up on the stage. And
we did Delta Dawn.
But the thing is, I just heard her sing
that
Joni Mitchell song, A Case of You. I'd never heard the song. I videoed it. And I watch it from time to time because I don't watch it a lot because it's very intimidating to me. And I watched her sing that song and I went, oh my God, I've never heard anything like it before in my life. And never, and the feeling, just everything, the presence, the her vocal ability, of course. And I just, she wanted me to sing a song when I got up there and I'm going like, all I want to do is go home. After I heard you sing, all I really want to do is just go home. Well, because there is nothing that can be better than that.
The good news is it's not a competition.
That's kind of, I got to think
about
that. You just
got to sing like you. She's got to sing like her. Everybody's happy.
You know, it's true. And, you know,
sometimes I sing like you.
And there is no competition that way.
No.
But it's like when Loretta Lynn won Female Vocalist of the Year, I was 14, first time I was up. It was in 1973, and she won. Loretta did.
Yeah.
For female vocals. I was up, but you know, I was, when she went up on that stage, I was like, yes, you know, because she was my hero.
Yeah.
And there was no, and I've often said there's not a jealous bone in my body. I just don't have that kind of makeup. It's not my constitution. And, I thought about it just fleetingly. I thought, yeah, it's kind of weird. There's no, there might have been a little when I saw her sing that song, but I heard her sing that song. Just a second, maybe. But no, there's no really competition. It's like we're very, I am, and I know she is very supportive of each other.
100%.
When there is just nothing there but love and you know, I told Brandy, I said, I think God kicked her off a cloud or something and said, go down there and take care of this, you know, this someone that fell right in my lap. And I thank him for that for sure, because it was it's like an enigma. Is that the right word?
Sure.
It's unexplainable. And I choose to call it a God thing. That's just what that's my higher power. That's the name of my higher power is God.
Yeah.
And I just think that, when you can't understand something or why it happened and the reason it happened and what have I done to maybe deserve it to happen. And I just think that's probably what it was.
Beautiful.
Well, it took a lot more than God, actually. Rick helped make it happen. Probably in a way he's not going to bring up on his own.
How did I help?
Can I say so? What?
Well, you know, you well, he was always my dream producer.
I know. Yeah. I know he is.
Yeah.
And I had heard that, and
I think my, I had my managers call you, and then he told him how much he was going to cost. And I
well, what it was
scared me. I said, "Oh, that scared me."
What happened was that the process was worrying to Tanya. It was stressing her out, and we had written these songs, and we were sending them to her, and she was struggling to hear herself in them.
Mm-hmm.
And and I think she was also struggling with the possibilities of what. How her life could change if she recorded the songs as well, even if she didn't really know it. Mm-hmm. And she kept canceling the album. Like her bus was pointed towards LA and
it was in Austin. Got as far as Austin.
Yeah. And the final time she canceled it was Christmas Day. And I was so disheartened because I just love her so much. Mm. And I knew it was the right thing. And the songs were about her. It was a musical biography.
Yes.
And Shooter and me were on the phone and I was pacing in my garage. We were all doing a lot of pacing.
Carpet worn out.
And he goes, you know, Rick, why don't you call Rick Rubin and ask him about this? Because it couldn't have been easy for him to convince Johnny Cash to do Nine Inch Nails songs and music that he didn't necessarily understand at that time. But he had a vision about the fact that the young people, that people needed to know where their punk rock country music came from. And this is how you feel about what women need to know, and that so many of us need to know that this is a country music matriarch that's still out there with so much to offer and still doing such great things. Why don't you see if you can get Rick on the phone? And it didn't even take me but an hour before you drove to a place you could get cell service and called me and gave me some of the greatest advice about Tanya. So I'm not trying to interview you,
no,
but why don't you
tell
talk
me
about that?
Tell me what I said.
I remember
we spoke, but I have no idea about the specifics of the conversation.
I told you.
You know it's written now.
The first thing you asked was about my intentions.
Yes.
Why I wanted to do it.
Yes.
And I told you what I just told you.
Yes.
That I was feeling like we were at a...
I don't remember this at all. So this is fascinating for
that
me
That would be
hear.
The first question.
Yeah,
because he wanted to make sure that it was for the right reasons before he gave me his extremely valuable advice.
I mean, that's not a normal first question.
Well, he's not a normal guy.
No, I know that. Far from it. So that's
so
very interesting.
I told you that I felt like we were at a cultural moment when what happened with Cash and you could and maybe should happen again within regard to the way women have impacted country music culture. And while the one we're discussing is still so vibrant and talented, willing to be out there and making beautiful art. And you were like, okay, great. This is the right thing to do then. Mm-hmm. Basically, you told me to persevere. And I told you that the album kept getting canceled and that there was a lot of apprehension. And you said it was totally normal and to be expected. And you gave me a lot of really good advice around putting all of my focus about whether or not they were the right songs, because I was questioning it too, because Tanya does have a knack for hearing great songs.
Yeah.
You told me to put all of my faith in whether or not the lyrics were right for the moment.
Yes.
And I did. I re-examined them. I pulled a few and dropped them, and I wrote a few. And the album was, it came together much more authentically after I talked to you.
Beautiful.
And it was spiritually really empowering and enlightening.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was a total spiritual experience.
Incredible.
You know,
I love hearing it. No, it's
it
just
wasn't
so beautiful
normal.
To me.
There wasn't one thing normal about it.
Your fingerprints were all over it.
Yeah.
And I called Shooter.
Because I'd always wanted you.
And I sat the band down and we really talked about it. Yeah.
I love what you did. And I couldn't really see the connection, you know, so much with the Johnny Cash. I mean, I loved that whole thing. I mean, what you did. But I couldn't see me being anywhere in that realm. And she did. Her and Shooter both discussed it a few times. And, of course, I've never really compared myself to anybody, usually female, no females anyway.
Yeah.
It's always been to men.
Yes.
Yeah, you do that habitually.
Yeah. Oh.
We'll be back with more Tanya Tucker and Brandi Carlile after the break. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora: to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
We're back with more of Rick's conversation with Tanya Tucker and Brandi Carlile.
I think sometimes it's hardest for us to see ourselves.
Oh,
you know,
totally.
To have someone outside who you know loves you.
You know loves you.
And cares about
you.
And
a stranger.
Yeah. Whose only interest is something that's good for you.
It's
you said that too on the phone.
Did I?
Fine.
You said that exact thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So consistent, you know.
Wow.
But she had to make the decision whether to trust it or not.
Yes.
And that was really the only wild card, because the intentions were there, the music was there. Is she going to decide to trust us, that we love her and that we only have her best interest at heart, or is she not? And that was the question that day.
Yeah, because I did. I told Brandi, I said, I probably shot those songs off to my old producer, Crutchfield, and, you know, a few of my people that I, sounding board people, you would, hey, and I was really kind of wanting anybody to say, no, these songs aren't strong enough for you. They're not what you need. But nobody did.
Wow.
Not one person. Not one person that I respect their opinion on. Said anything and said, "Yeah, just go out and see what it can't hurt nothing." You know?
No, and that's the other part of it is, and I can kind of have, as you're saying that, I have a vague recollection of something I said, which is, there's no reason not to try it. If you don't like it, you don't put it out.
But at least
see what it is before you say you don't like it.
Well, you know what? That's what Shooter told me.
Yeah,
and I was standing on top of a tree trunk. Down in our Texas, South
that
Texas ranch.
Yeah.
And he cut the tree, and it was about that. And I got up on top of it to get cell service, trying to get here. And Shooter said to me that exact thing.
Yeah, if you don't like it, it's fine.
He said, let's just point the bus this way. We'll get in the room, you and me and Brandi.
Yeah.
We'll go over the songs. He said, don't even listen to them anymore.
Yeah.
Just come to LA. We'll get in a room. and we'll try a few things. And if you don't like it, I can point back to Nashville and go back home. You know?
Absolutely.
And he said, but I just want you to trust me on this, me and Brandy. You need, I'm asking you to trust us.
Yeah.
And he said you'd do anything in the world for me. And I went, oh, you're going to use that card so early in our life. Okay. So I got back to Austin. I paced a little while longer.
She calls him Little Waylon. You're awful young to use that little one, Waylon. Little Waylon.
Yeah. And then the thing was the 9th I had, it was we started in the studio on the 7th of January. But
that's right.
The 9th I had some time here.
Yeah.
With Chris.
Yes.
Christopher.
So I think that was a if I'm going to be talking from my gut, I think that was a lot to do with it too, knowing that I was going to be getting him on this song was really important to me. But it was important too that I did what Shooter asked me to do.
Yeah.
I love him.
Have you ever sing or perform with Chris ever before in the past?
Have I sung with him before?
Yeah.
No.
It's odd that your paths never crossed.
Didn't you host something with him?
We've met from time to time.
No, but still, in terms of performance,
No. I know it seemed like it would be a shoe in. No, I hadn't. And I hadn't seen him in probably 20, 25 years.
Isn't he gorgeous?
Yeah, he is. He's just a hunk.
Oh, he's still hunk just hunk gorgeous.
Of burning love.
82-year-old
salt
man.
And pepper.
You can't hardly look him in the eyes.
So I just text him, and they're in New Zealand. I said, are you guys in Malibu? And it was so sweet because the last line, I needed him to say five words at the end of the song. Amen to that, brother and sister. Just like that. And so I called Eric, Christopherson, they were driving up north.
Yeah.
And he said, just tell him to pull down below, that little studio down below.
Yeah.
And then I said, when you get him in front of the mic, call me. And I was in Marina Del Rey. And he said, Chris is listening. What do you want him to do? And he did it one take, fit it perfect. It was just, again, it was already.
Because here's the reason why that worked out. Because you were hearing him actually say those lines because that's what he would naturally do.
Right.
So you knew as soon as you told him what to do that he was going to be Chris Christopherson and do it.
Yes.
That's what I felt like when we were writing these songs. I knew exactly how you would sing them. I knew where your voice would crack. I knew when you'd decide to have a little rasp and sing like Elvis. I knew everything you'd do before you did it because we were writing them, not
with
just for
mind.
You, but from you in this weird way. You know?
Wow. I can't imagine...
You just
three people going into
Chris.
A room and going, okay, let's write an album for a person that we don't even know. I've never even met before.
No, because it's a person that you love and you look up to. It's almost like it's a fantasy version of you that they're writing for.
It's true.
Like
that is true.
It's an elevated mythological version.
Wow.
Of you.
You're so right.
Yeah.
You're so right. I've learned that in retrospect in a big way. Maybe she didn't identify with some of these in the beginning because I'm projecting.
Yeah, because she's a human being and you're writing for a myth.
Yeah. That makes sense.
A hero, a superhero.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
because that's
did
how
you
see
feel
her.
That way while you were selecting songs for Johnny Cash?
Absolutely. It was to some degree, it didn't matter. It was more... that the songs had to fit the myth of Johnny Cash than the person.
The real person.
Yes.
Exactly. Wow.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's great.
No, it's a great.
No, for the fans, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. It's art. We're making art.
Yeah.
And maybe it's the only way you could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mustang
Ridge is about, first of all, there's grains of truth in it because they're all places that she's lived. There's not a single place that's made up, whether it's Wild Rose Pass or the Hay Street Bridge. They're all real places. But Mustang Ridge is about a woman who escapes from, prison and steals a car and then disappears. And nobody knows whether she killed herself or whether she just made it out.
Beautiful.
But it's Tanya. Yeah. And she's Tanya in the song and she's breaking out of prison. It's a metaphor. But it's of course, that's not the real Tanya. She's not really, she's not really going to Thelma and Louise it by herself. But for some reason, like, that's just the way I was singing.
It's the mythology. Do you want to play that song now?
Sure, can we?
There's a guitar right there.
Oh, wait, I don't know how to play it, actually.
No?
I don't know how to physically play it. Tim plays it.
Well, no.
But you can play it on the record? Yeah, yeah,
okay,
sure.
We wrote the line, right? I wish I'd learned to play guitar. I wish I'd learned to play guitar.
Yeah.
I'll do it here. Be fun to listen to.
So, this is what you call a podcast. I didn't know what a podcast was.
Oh, yeah? They're amazing. Everybody loves them now. It's like
Is this not just a radio interview?
No, it's not.
It's different.
It's not much different.
But it's just for the internet or something.
Yeah.
It's a radio interview people actually listen to.
Oh.
Okay, here we go.
At the end of all the songs, she'd finish it and she'd say something like, hell no.
I'm an ad-libber from way back.
Hell no.
Hell no.
You know, just like stuff. It's like,
And what was wild too about it too is this experience in the studio, because everything was done there when we went before we left. The vocals,
Sunset Sound.
Great. Yeah, it was great. Great studio. It was awesome. I think I did something with Little Richard there years ago. I'm not sure, but I think so. With Don Was, but it was mostly live. I mean, everything was recorded like me and
Billy. Sounds like it.
Like me and Billy recorded. Back in the first songs I ever did with Delta Dawn, all those songs that were the first ones with Billy Sherrill, I did live. I mean, if somebody messed up, we had to start over, you know?
Yeah.
And I never did get a set of headphones.
Yeah.
He wouldn't let me have them.
Yeah.
I had some kind of monitor, thin monitor on both sides of my head,
mm-hmm.
which I can't understand how it didn't leak.
You just didn't care if it did.
But, I mean, it was just... And some of those records are still my favorite records.
Yeah.
And of course, I've never had anybody in the vocal booth with me the whole time either.
Were you in the vocal booth
the whole time?
Amazing.
Whole time.
Every note.
Wow.
Every note. And, you know, and a couple of things. I mean, I ripped off from her. You know, like, and the palm trees are reaching.
And the palm trees are reaching. I ripped that off from you.
Yeah, I ripped it off from you.
30 years ago.
Yeah, isn't that funny? So we just keep the circle going.
Never Going Back to Mustang Ridge is a great phrase. It just has a musical sound to it. And it sounds like, you know, I want to learn more.
I want to know more about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it paints a picture, but leaves enough mystery that you want to
fill in. Yeah, you go like, wait a minute, either I'm going to fill in the holes.
Good writing.
Yes.
I got to credit the twins.
Oh, yeah,
Tim
the twins
and Phil,
are so
my
fantastic.
Boys for all these years, they... really dove into this with me, and we all fell so deeply in love with Tanya.
Well, I asked him, you know, I texted him. This is way after the record.
Yeah.
What's a hobnail? What's a jamboozy?
Yeah.
How do you write songs about someone you don't even know? He goes, well, both of them said they just drove around their cars listening to my music, and I guess Googled me a lot, and fell in love, they said. So... I mean, I wonder what I was doing at the time. You know, well, I was probably
there's a landscape,
shoveling
fantasy
manure or something.
Landscape of Tanya Tucker too. There's like a, you know, this exactly like this projected fantasy of poverty, and a trek from Texas through Arizona and Las Vegas, and this migration to Nashville that happened in a series of cars and trailers and eventually buses. And yeah, it paints quite the picture. I could make 10 albums about Tanya's life.
Mm. You know, and it's amazing to me when I think about it, and I guess I didn't really think about it till someone brought it up recently and said, you know, how very major this is of you at 61 kind of having a resurge in my career. You know, and he said, it was a guy, and he said, can you imagine how much hope that's giving so many people that, you know, think because you're not 25, you can't have a hit record or be palatable to the music buyer or the music lover? And I go, wow, you know, it kind of true.
One of the greatest things about it was that she spent half the time singing, working so hard, harder than anybody my age, anybody I know, working so hard, never once getting irritable or frustrated or upset with herself or anyone else. And then the rest of the time, sitting in a control room chair, just like that, man spreading and telling the most incredible stories about country music and the road and her dad. And just, it, I don't know, you just really carry yourself with a lot of dignity. And I was really proud to be in there with you.
Well, she's so interested, you know, it wasn't like it was an interview, but it was.
I'm interested now. You're a fascinating person to listen to.
Well, you won't get that from me because I mean I can't agree with that because I'm me. But
you were in the studio, did it feel better?
Oh, become more comfortable. You mean?
Yeah, you had anxiety before thinking this might not be for me.
Right.
But then when you actually heard the music and you're in the room with the people, did it feel like, oh, this is a good experience?
Absolutely. I mean, from the moment I walked into the studio, of course, I had two mics on at all times, you know, because we're documenting.
Which you filmed it as well.
I think it's the only way to do it.
Incredible documentary. Fantastic.
You have to document.
Can't wait for you to
fantastic.
See it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Can't wait to see it.
And I don't know why we haven't done that in the past. It's that I thought, film everything. Everything.
Whose idea was that? That was
That was probably hers over there. But
I set it up 10 hours before the session.
Smart.
I called the best filmmaker that I know, called Kathleen Tinfish Productions. And I was like, I think something's going to happen tomorrow. Tanya Tucker's coming to the studio. She might turn around and leave. I don't know what's going to happen, but can you just be there to capture it? Because it might be crazy. Or it might be amazing. And she's like, I'm supposed to be in the UK, but I'm canceling it. And she showed up with a real film crew, real lab mics, real sound crew and everything.
She
never left and she filmed. Oh, God, and they love you.
They're so incredible.
We have made a documentary that's extended beyond the studio into her first shows.
Beautiful.
Into Loretta's birthday appearance.
I'm surprised it's not on me right
now. Her first walking onto an arena stage in over a decade or two.
At least 20 years.
And it's incredible. Wait till you see it.
Beautiful.
The ups and downs.
I'm used to being... filmed. I had a reality show for a couple of years on TLC, Tuckerville. But I'm used to it, so that was not a problem for me. In fact, I most of the time forgot that they were even there. But it really felt comfortable, I think. And I've always said that I think the best way, my best feeling of all, that I could ever, if I had to pick one word, want to be, even over pretty, over what, and all that stuff, I just want to be comfortable.
Mm.
It's my favorite feeling. And when I'm comfortable, I can do my best. It's when I'm not comfortable that I can't perform my best. And so that was laid out. That was something that I look back on, and when people are asking me, since we've done the record, I look back on that and think, yeah, I remember that when Cheater came out and you came out, we met outside the studio. And then when I walked in, it was like, it was a feeling of a comfort that I hadn't felt in a while.
Beautiful.
And it was a really comfortable.
How would you say your relationship to music has changed from the early days to now?
I don't know if it's changed or just kind of grown.
Did it start for you more as work or more as love?
In the studio?
No, period. In music, your relationship to music and life.
Wow, that's a good question. I don't know. I'm a little torn on that because, you know, being from we were poor, but I didn't really... pay much. I mean, it wasn't something, you know, you're only poor if you choose to be, you know, that Dolly said in that one line I love. But it was more, I think, if I think about it hard, I think it was something that made my dad happy.
Yeah.
And he enjoyed when I would sing.
Yes.
And I knew that. And I think that he saw a way out of to get his family out, ahead.
I see.
And have a career. So it was always based on money, trying to get ahead.
Yeah.
Trying to get something that I could buy my parents a new house, you know, instead of living in a trailer house, and new car, my mother. And, you know, it was always money was motivated. It was motivating me. I think that's what started it out. But... then I think as I've moved on and went through different stages of my musical career and my life, it's developed into more of a love
Yeah.
I mean, I know I got to, you know, pay the bills.
It makes sense what you said about when your dad passed.
Yes.
And then your mom passed. It's like, why am I doing this anymore?
Because yeah. They're the ones I did it for.
Yeah.
That does make sense.
That was the whole reason.
Can I make an observation, actually?
Yes, please.
It's very interesting when you're poor and you're talented, because it's like what happens is ambition and love and money get really intertwined.
It's distorted.
You can't untie them. Mm. And then you get this thing I like to call poor kid work ethic, where, yeah, you love it, but you're willing to work
harder,
so incredibly hard to prosper and provide for your family, whoever that is.
That's
even
what
if
it
you're
is.
The kid. Even if you're the kid,
yeah.
Because your ambition and your love for music is tied up in the need for means. And it's actually kind of okay.
Yeah.
Like, why 100%. Shouldn't you have to work really hard? 100%.
Plus, my dad was so involved. I mean,
yeah.
He, I always say, if it wasn't for my dad and Billy Sherrill, mm-hmm. They never jihad, you know, they never were. In fact, I don't think it says more than five words to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they're very different kind of people, very different kind of, just totally different kind of men. And both of them were very powerful, and I couldn't have done it. I can't imagine to have done it,
doing anything without. They recognized that they were in proximity to absolutely once-in-a-lifetime voice that has never been replicated and never could be replicated, which was also you.
Well, and you know what? And I think another thing is, too, that Billy Sherrill listened to me.
Yeah, talk about
it. He listened
this.
Everything.
He respected you.
I don't know how. I mean, I was, when they come in, and Al Gallico, you know, remember Al Gallico, he was a big publisher. And he had the publishing on Happiest Girl in the Whole USA, that Donna Fargo first song she came out with. And it wasn't out yet. So he had the single, and he had control of it because he was the publisher. And he played it. I remember, Billy, he got a big cigar hanging out of his mouth. Hey, he's Italian. He said, I get a monster. I brought you a monster. So all of Billy's cronies, you know, Gnarl Wilson, George Ritchie, all those guys, there are about five or six of them come in there to see his reaction. Because they felt like, wow, we've got the we've got the hit. And then looking back onto it, retrospect, you know.
They were playing it for Billy Sherrill to get him to ask you to do it.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm sitting over in the alcove, kind of right there, and I remember exactly what I had on. I got my legs crossed, and they played the song, and Billy looks over at me, and he says, what do you think about that song, kid? And I didn't hesitate. I said, I think this song is really a good song, but it's not my song.
Yeah.
And that's in my exact words.
Yeah.
And he said, you heard her, boys.
Yeah.
And they're going like, whoa, 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 whoa. Because Billy was a little left to center, you know.
Yeah.
They were scratching their heads when they walked out, including Al Gallico. They were going like, he's lost it. He is listening to a kid, you know. Yeah. And so when they all left, I've seen him thread that thing, that reel to reel, a million times.
Yeah.
And he said, I heard a chick on the Tonight Show last night. And I never know who that was. He said, but she sang a song I think you might like. Let me play it for you. But he played me a guitar vocal of Alex Harvey singing, she's 41. Started out, she's 41. Didn't start out the chorus. And when he got done playing that song, I looked at him and I said, now that is my song.
Wow. And let's see if we can find that version.
I'd like to hear 1972.
Let's see.
It Alex is Harvey. Your song.
And
that
we
will
did it live.
And many people have done it, but.
And I never, ever had any problems with him about what I wanted to, you know, Columbia Records didn't think enough about me to even have a more than a three song deal. They didn't think I'd even get to an album, you know. And looking back on it, but when we did go back in and cut an album, any album I did with him, which was four albums.
I wonder if it's available anywhere, or if it was just like a weird fluke thing that he managed to get his hands on.
Yeah, he never did. The only time he ever gave me a little problem was when I wanted to cut Almost Persuaded, and his song he wrote.
Mm.
And he said, I don't think you should cut that. I said,
too adult for you?
I don't know. I think, no. after all the songs, you know, Daddy left them both soaking up the sawdust on the floor. I mean, all the songs were adult. Mm-hmm. Would you lay with me in a field of stone if my needs were strong?
Yeah.
You know, those were all, so it wasn't being too adult. I think that because he wrote it and he didn't want to be, you know, didn't want to, people think he was just doing it because it was his. It was my choice.
Tell me if this is the right version.
I can tell you instantly.
We'll be back with more Tanya Tucker and Brandi Carlile after the break. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
We're back with more of Rick's conversation with Tanya Tucker and Brandi Carlile.
Those are the two Alex Harvey Delta Dawns.
Oh, you're talking about Alex Harvey. No, that was just, I don't think that's ever been out. You know,
it was just a guitar vocal demo. I see.
But the chick was a Bette Midler.
Oh, great.
And she had sung Delta Dawn.
I see. But that wasn't the version you heard.
No, because she was did it not after the version.
That was not the version. No, she did it before.
Bette Midler did it before you?
Yes. That's what he said. He said there was a chick that sang this on the...
On the Tonight Show.
Tonight Show last night.
So it wasn't Alex Harvey.
But he played her the Alex Harvey version.
I get it. Yeah. Sorry, I'm a little slow.
And I didn't find out till years later that it was Bette Midler.
Yeah.
Wow.
That actually did the song.
So why does history remember that as so...
And Helen Reddy cut it a year and a half later.
Everybody really sees that as your song.
It is.
Your song. It's your Delta Dawn.
And it, even though it had been cut, Dion Davidson, I think, had a single on it. It had been cut a few times.
I love the way that
it's my song.
Nothing Compares to You, we think of not as Prince's song.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's like, doesn't matter who wrote it or who put it out first. It matters who owns the song.
The definitive, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's well, their song now.
We recorded the next morning. It was at 10 o'clock studio time. Of course, I was tired. So, because I'd been, my dad, I said, just keep playing it. Keep playing it for me. Because I want to learn it as good as I could the night before. And we got to Columbia Records, the Studio B. And it was, well, actually, we went into his office, Billy's office. And it was 10 o'clock. And I laid down on his couch. And I slept till, he let me sleep till noon. And he finally come there and got me. The session started at 10. He's like, do you think you're ready to, you know, do something ready about your career, kid? Yeah. And I got up and we did it live with the Nashville Edition and the Jordanaires and all the greats, Pig Robbins and some of the greatest musicians, Pete Drake on steel and Charlotte McCoy on harmonica. So, in fact, we're going to go back in and recut it. And I'm gathering all the, as many of the original players that are still around. To go back in and do a version.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be. And Lou Bradley engineered.
Mm-hmm. Who played the drums?
So he's, he's gone. He's gone. In fact, he passed about a month and a half ago, Jerry Kerrigan, one of the great drummers.
Well, we can have Pat.
One of the great drummers. So I think we're going to get I think it was Eddie or Paul. Eddie Bears or Paul Lyon, one of those guys.
Cool.
But we're just trying to put that together. And then Brenda Lee, I got to cut that song that she wrote for me and her. You hear it?
TNT and Dynamite.
I think it's so cute. I mean, it's so precious that Brenda Lee, one of my heroes, would write a song about me and her.
Brenda
and
Lee loves
it. I don't care what it would be. Mary Had a Little Lamb. I'd want to cut it, you know? So, but, you know, used to, people would ask me, what do you enjoy more? You enjoy performing live or you enjoy recording better? Mm. And the answer to that was always, I enjoy performing. More than
being in front of an audience.
Yeah, being in the studio, I've painted my nails a lot. I've slept a lot in the studio.
Yeah.
You know, one time my producer didn't even show up. Yeah, you know, most of the time when I did TNT.
She is incredible live.
But
it's unbelievable.
It used to be live, but the answer would have to be now being in the studio.
Oh, nice.
Because I love the creation of new music and the creativity and the camaraderie, let's try this.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, how many producers does it take to screw in a light bulb? I don't know. What do you think? But I mean, I enjoy, it's hard to say what you like. I mean, I love both of them. Yeah. I mean, I have to do both of them. They're very, like you said, you can't separate them, really. But I really enjoy the process now.
That's nice.
And I've been working on a couple projects. That I have, I mean, I have two albums that are almost ready to go.
Great.
If someone said, you got a week to finish them, we'd have it done.
Great.
So I've not been twiddling my thumbs and not doing anything. It's just I couldn't get anybody interested.
Yeah. When's your next tour date? Do you know?
Well, the next show is...
tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
At the Troubadour.
Tomorrow, the next day.
Troubadour.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah. Two nights.
Yeah. That's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll hope. We'll hope so. We're going to go in and try to
and
get those ears.
And she is a troubadour.
Like an old troubadour. You know, that was written by a girl, which is kind of interesting. That George Strait song.
Yeah.
He's an old troubadour. You heard that one?
Yeah, of course.
And that was written by a girl, which I think is kind of different. But I really enjoy that process. And I thought, just about the time I thought I'd done a record, made a record every which way you could make one.
Yeah.
Then along comes Brandy and Shooter and... Another
and
way
Rick,
of doing
spiritually.
It. Another way of doing it.
Out there in the ether.
Yeah. Yeah. The all the others were, I don't know. There's no comparison really to the feeling I had making the record.
Beautiful.
And the comfort level.
Beautiful. And it sounds like it reminds you of when you first started making records.
Oh,
everybody was in the room together.
I went right back.
Yeah.
To that time. And, you know, I'm not so sure I would have been able to do it. If I hadn't had that experience with Billy Sherrill.
Yes.
You know, but, you know, I've always been a live person, very live. I mean, even with my producer, Jerry Crutchfield, who produced 13 albums in a row on me. And the way I found out the way I got him, I talked to my old lawyer and I videoed it, everything on video, because I wanted to ask him, Bill Carter, he was the Rolling Stones lawyer and and Secret Service, and he was my attorney at that time. And I asked him, I said, how did I get Crutchfield? Because I had just come off Snuff Garrett.
Yeah.
In a studio in Santa Monica, had two number one records. But I told my dad, I go, I can't work like this. It's like I'm on a damn assembly line. And everybody's reading it. There's like, he don't even want me there when I'm for the basic tracks. Mm. I'm going like, what if it's in the wrong key?
Yeah.
Well, we'll just manipulate the track.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't, I was just turned 16 and I couldn't fathom that. You know, of course, Hal Blaine was playing the drums and I love that. It's all the great players. But I didn't like that way of working. And I told my dad, I said, Daddy, I can't. I felt like we could cut this album in 10 minutes. You know, everything's real fast. And Al Capps was the arranger who really, I think, did most of the work on those records. And he was hot at that time with all the Cher records, you know, Gypsies, Tramps, and things. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not comfortable. I can't. So he told Snuff, he said, well, I'm sorry, we're going to have to let you go. And of course, Snuff, you know, blew a gasket. I asked my attorney, he said, what are we going to do? Who's going to produce now? I said, we'll go back to Nashville.
Yeah.
That's where I feel comfortable there.
Yeah.
I don't like this out here.
Yeah.
Everybody's reading, you know, it didn't feel right. And he said, well, who are you thinking about? And I said, whoever produced that song, please come to Boston. I said, I want that guy. And that was Jerry Crutchfield.
Amazing. Wow.
And so when we connected up,
called more shots than you think you did.
Yeah, when I look back on it, I think, God dang it, you know, I should have more faith in myself because I really directed a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm. As a kid.
As a kid.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
As a kid, I thought, why do you put two singles on an album and the rest you just, why can't we have 10 singles?
Yes.
Every now you're talking like Rick record. Rubin.
Now that was my thinking.
Yeah.
Every
why
song.
Do you record with a band and then tour with another one?
Yeah.
Why can't we put those together?
Yes.
So, and don't put a saxophone on my record when I don't have one in the band.
Yeah.
You know, or I have at least a way to get to one, yeah. You know? And so I had all these, thoughts and, wonder and why do you do this and why do you and several times I've told Crutchfield, I said, man, that mix, I can't do the mix, you gotta remix it. I went out, we played Strong Enough for Men, the whole album, and I walked
Such
out and I
song.
Cried in the parking lot. I said, oh my God. And my father and my two older children was with me. He goes, what's wrong? It sounded great. And I went, no, oh my God, no, he's gotta remix it. So my ears are just so I mean, I've got really great ears.
Yeah.
And you I tell feel them I can hear a cat like fart in the barn.
But when you feel it and you know it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to argue or discuss about it. It's like you either feel it or you don't.
It's like, don't argue with me.
Yes.
I had that argument last night or this morning. You know, when you know, just don't argue. This is what if you want to work with me, let's do it like I want to do it. Now, if you want to pay all the bills and pay me, I'll do it your way.
Yes.
But I feel like my ears have been a thorn in my side, a blessing and a curse at the same time.
Yes.
Because I have trouble with my in-ears.
Yes.
And I said, I don't understand why. And they go, what did you want? What are you missing with sound check? You know, when you're sound checking for a show. Mm-hmm. And monitor guy, because I've been through them. I've had 20, and I've fired them before I got off stage sometime.
Yeah.
Because I said, if you're hearing what I'm hearing, you let me stand out there hearing this shit, then you got to go.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, what I'm hearing, if it sounds bad, I think that's what they're hearing.
Yeah.
And it's always, well, it sounds good out front. I go, why can't I enjoy it too?
Yeah.
If they're going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Why can't I just hear it like they hear it?
Yeah.
You know, my monitor guy for the last 5 years or so has been the studio engineer I work with when we made Firewatcher's Daughter in Bear Creek. So, like, he cultivated this monitor mix for me that makes no sense to anyone else.
Well, I was going to ask you about that.
It makes no sense to anyone else.
We'll talk about it.
But to me, it's like a limb. I can't do without it. And it's like, it's how I hear my voice. And if I don't have that, I EQ my monitors with my voice. So I push harder. I round out vowels. I harden hard consonants, and I hurt my voice.
Yeah.
And I didn't used to think I was picky because I'm a bar singer, but like, because this guy wants you to feel like you feel in the studio, like when you're making a record.
Right.
He's got my monitor mix in a way that's like, now it's on this like priceless little thumb.
Okay. Well, I need him.
I can never lose it.
I swear I threatened to quit about every show.
It's a hard thing.
It's like, I just want your mind. If they're hearing what I'm hearing in my ears, oh my God.
Well, I don't do in ears though, but you know, I guess it's the same principle.
So, they are saying I have to leave. Is that right?
Yeah, in like 10 minutes.
They say like 10 minutes.
Oh. Well, I feel like I've known Rick forever. I feel like I've, you know, like maybe, I mean, if Willie's right about this reincarnation deal, I don't think he is. But if he is, maybe that's the deal. You know,
maybe
we met some other.
Do you know, I would be so inspired and amazed if you guys ever worked together and did something. Just to hear it.
Well, I would love to do. You know, I
feel like I know what Rick would do, and I think it's got to happen at some point.
Great. We'll figure out what that is.
Or to both of you, maybe.
Yeah, we do it all together.
I'll just be a fan.
You write the song. You write the song.
Surprise me.
Yeah, it would be awesome. Well, it's so funny because Johnny Cash, you know the story when I, well, it was the first Farm Aid. And I was on Merle's bus, and he was chewing out Mark Rothbaum. He was really upset with him. And I said, oh, I will turn around to leave. And he went, stay right there. And I guess he wanted me to hear whatever he had to say to Mark. And I don't know why. But he gave me this hat. And so I skip ahead. Well, left his bus and went on stage. And it was a circle stage. So half of it was getting ready, and the other half was doing it. And I think Mellencamp was on. And all of a sudden, you know, everywhere you looked, it wasn't anybody you didn't know. Everybody was a star, you know. And all of a sudden I heard, Tanya. And Marty Haggard said, Johnny Cash was hollering at you. And I looked around, and there it was. It was like the parting of the Red Sea. The people just kind of, like they knew that he was talking to me. And the music's going on, but I could hear him very well. So I turned and I thought, well, I'm just going to meet him, you know. So I started walking toward him. He started walking toward me, and we met in the middle. And he goes, I just wanted to say hello and hug your neck. And, of course, the first thing I said was, well, I said, I've been trying to write this song. I got this idea for a song. But I said, you're the only hoss that could sing it, so if you don't like it, then I ain't going to write it, you know. And he said, I thought, well, you know, let's meet up next week. Well, sing a little bit of it to me. And of course, it was just an idea, you know. So I had to come up with something. So I just like looked back.
Oh, you didn't have one?
Oh,
well, you had the idea, though.
I had the idea. And so he goes, sing a little. And I'm thinking, okay. I look back and I went, help me out here, you know. I said a little prayer. And so then not only did I started singing it, but I started imitating him, which is so funny. Well, you got the man in black feeling blue. This just came out my ass because I had nothing else, you know. And you got, I just can't get over getting all over you. I sing for what is right and I stand for what is true. But you got the man in black feeling blue, you know. And that's all I had.
Yeah.
I was amazed I come up with that.
Wow, T.
And he goes, I like that. Well, I'll go see you later, bye. So I go home with Neil Young on his bus. I'm going like, where was my dad? And then I'm like, what the hell? My dad just prepared me for those things is what it was. And he knew he could trust me. So I'm on Neil Young's bus going home. I get home. They take me home to Nashville. And the next day, I think it was Marty Stewart, maybe, called me and said, Cash wants that song. I said, Jesus, it's not a song. It's an idea for a song. And so when they were filming the movie Stagecoach, I went down and saw Chris and took a bath. It might have been the last time I saw him. And then they went to Tucson. And me and Billy Joe Shaver were kind of hanging out and writing some songs together. And they're about done with Stagecoach. And I said, you know what? Them old boys are all, I guarantee you, they're all mad at each other right now. You know, Chris ain't talking to Waylon. Waylon's pissed off at Willie. And I guarantee you, you're going to, they're mad at each other. Just go down there. I got him a plane ticket to Tucson. I sent Billy Joe Shaver down there. I said, and this is just kind of stuff like we're talking about, like things that come out of my mouth and then they happen. I said, Willie's going to be by the pool. He's going to be by the pool, and he's just about down to the worm, you know, and he's going to be drunk on his ass. I said, but you just go and you go to Cash's room, and I figured the best way to get him to cut that song was to get him to finish it, you know, to write it. And I said, he'll cut it if he writes it, if he finishes. So they finished it. They finished the song. And I asked John Carter the other day if maybe he'd had it, recorded it or something, yeah. You know, put it down before he passed. But it was exactly the way Billy Joe walked in and went out to the pool, and there was Willie just on his butt.
Me and Rick were just talking about this when you went to the bathroom. So you do these ideas, right?
Yeah.
That wind up being songs for other people or whatever, yeah. Because you say these things come out of your mouth, they're a little bit inspired.
Right.
Like earlier when you said that you felt like when you lost your parents, there was more love behind you than there was ahead of you, which is a song.
Yep.
But like...
Soon to be.
Soon to be a song. But when we made this album, you were sitting in a chair just like that in a control room, and you were telling me that you called Loretta up on the phone.
On the way to Austin.
You told her that you had one of your ideas, which was, bring my flowers now while I'm living.
I won't
need your love when I'm gone. Don't spend time, tears, or money on my old breathless body. If your heart is in them flowers, bring them now. Bring them on in the end.
Changed it.
And I was awestruck. And of course, we had the documentary crew, so we were recording the whole thing. I recorded it. I was like, send me that to my phone. Tanya went home. I played it for Shooter, and Shooter's like, you got to write that song. And me and she didn't get out of it this time.
Yeah.
She wanted out of it.
I didn't get out of it.
But she had to sit at the piano with me, and she had to write that song. And it became the title track and really the kind of deep inspiration behind what the album actually is. And the album got named While I'm Living. Your ideas are more penetrative than you think that they are. Like, is it true that you wrote the
ocean
idea
property.
For... If you I got some oceanfront property in Arizona. From my front porch, you can
see
the sea.
I
got some oceanfront property in Arizona. If you buy that, I'll throw the Golden Gate in free.
That's right.
How much? So that was your.
See, what was the deal? Is that Dean Dillon and I were hanging out. We were just like connected at the hip, you know. And he's one of my favorite writers of all time. And then everybody would say, like, if you believe that, you know, I got some swamp land to sell you in Louisiana. And I'm thinking, well, there is swamp land in Louisiana. So what the hell? It should be like, if you believe that, I got some oceanfront property in Arizona, you know. And that came out of my mouth, and Royce Porter and Dean Dillon, and we were sitting at his house. And that just kind of...
That's a huge
that's what happened.
Song. And nobody knows that Tanya Tucker spit that line out?
No, I mean, I didn't...
But it doesn't surprise
no
me at all, because you do it all damn day.
Yeah, I feel like I've taken Roger Miller's place. You know, Roger Miller, songwriters, you'd see him everywhere, all around him, you know, if he went somewhere.
Because if he said anything,
he's going to say something any minute. And that I'm writing it down. I mean, I have friends, I mean, Dennis Quaid included, that has a pad.
Yeah.
And they write things down.
I do it all day. Yeah. And actually, Rick's even doing it.
Yeah, I wrote down the same line that she wrote down when you said it.
It's funny.
You really are.
I mean, I got a lot of them.
You really are an inspiring person. Well, and you don't know it, and that's what makes it so true.
No, I have no idea. I mean, and sometimes I feel so inadequate. And I'm sure that, you know, everybody must feel that way at some point.
For sure.
But and feel like, I mean, especially when you're around her, it's like, oh my God, I got a lot to learn. But and she's so available and for me and at any time, and it's been really a wonderful thing. But you know, I always want to be better. No matter if I'm cooking a chili relleno, or if I'm writing a song, or if I'm out riding my horse in a competition, you know, I just want to be the best I can be. Like that, what was that one commercial? I mean, that says American Express, don't leave home without it. Don't leave home without it. I say, don't stay home with it. You know, don't stay home with it. You know, I mean, so I've got this, commercial mind of I love writing commercials. Yeah. You know? I mean, hell, Barry Manilow made a career out of it, didn't he? Mm. And so there's so many ways and so many things to be done that I've yet to do. And I feel like, you know, sometimes I'm running out of time.
You've got so much
energy. Yeah, you know, I'm running out of time. Well, it's amazing because I have Epstein-Barr, and that's the chronic fatigue. And some days I don't know how I'm going to get out of bed, but I do. And
but then you get up on stage and shake your hips like Elvis.
Yeah, and then come off and fall on the floor. But I guess I don't know. They asked me what I want to be remembered for, and I guess I'm still working on that answer. I guess a good person that had a good nature and was always ready to help somebody, you know, always on the front row. Yeah, fought it for the cannon.
I feel like you're just getting started.
And that's what I said. This album's a great place to start,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Don't you feel like that?
That's what I tell once there somebody that's interviewed me. I said, well, it's a start. 46 albums later.
There are many, many starts.
Yeah. And I think that, and you say you only live once. I said, no. You live many times. You only die once.
There you go. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. You are you writing that or am I writing that?
There's so many, Rick. It's all day. It's all day long.
Yeah. Yeah,
just gotta record
just
everything she says.
Yeah. Just a walking song.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you'd have a lot of fun.
But to be inspirational and to inspire people to write or do whatever it is they do. Yeah. If I can inspire them to do and be better at what they do, it inspires me
well,
to
you
be
sure
better
have done that for
at
me.
What I
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
You've done that for me.
And you have done it for me, and you have too as well.
Thank you.
Unknowingly, but maybe because beautiful. I haven't really met you, but I've, you know, I feel that connection for
thank
sure.
You.
And I've always had it, but just that price was just a little too high for me. I was like,
he
damn.
Earned it.
Damn.
He earned it.
Thanks to Tanya Tucker and Brandi Carlile for coming through Shangri-La to tape Broken Record. Head to TanyaTucker.com to check out when a tour is coming through your town. And you can check out her new album produced by Brandi Carlile and Shooter Jennings on our Spotify playlist at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. And while you're there, sign up for a behind-the-scenes newsletter. Broken Record is produced with help from Jason Gambrell and Mia Lobel. Our theme music is by Kenny Beats. Stay tuned for next week's episode with The Black Keys. I'm Justin Richmond.
Really pleasure talking to you.
Well,
thank you. Same.
Well, I mean, I can talk your ear off. I talk too much to be an alcoholic. I guarantee. I can't
down.
Get two drinks
talk
down.
Too much
look
to
look
be
that.
An alcoholic. Write it down. Somebody take notes.
It's just one after the other. They're so good.
Thanks to Tanya Tucker and Brandi Carlile for coming through Shangri-La to tape Broken Record. Head to TanyaTucker.com to check out when a tour is coming through your town. And you can check out her new album produced by Brandi Carlile and Shooter Jennings on our Spotify playlist at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. And while you're there, sign up for a behind-the-scenes newsletter. Broken Record is produced with help from Jason Gambrell and Mia Lobel. Our theme music is by Kenny Beats. Stay tuned for next week's episode with The Black Keys. I'm Justin Richmond.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.